This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of perversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Welcome everyone to This Just In, back again after 2 weeks and lazy, but you know what, I've got to explain something here. Here we are, This Just In, an immensely popular mega hit podcast, and we're competing against other mega hit podcasts, and you know what the big difference is between us and them? They get paid, we don't! We're doing this in our spare time, out of fun, I guess. I don't know if it still is fun. I guess for the half hour we do it, it still is fun. But for the week leading up to the half hour, it's pure dread because we don't get a cent from it. And I think if everyone just starts mailing things to our P.O. box, you know, preferably $100 bills, that, you know what, you'll see This Just In coming out on time every week without fail.
Actually, as an addendum to that, you won't see it happen because since I'm in charge of the P.O. box, you will never know if those $100 bills even come in because they will go right into my bank account.
Yeah, but, I mean, I just feel like we've got to address that fact that, you know, people are harping on us for not getting this thing out. But, you know, I'm in graduate school. Right now, a week from today, I've got two 20-page papers to do that not only need to be researched, but written. So it's like, This Just In, or my entire career in 40 pages of writing, you know. Hopefully we have a decent enough show for you today, and we don't want to hear any more bitching.
I don't think we have one for him today, honestly. I'm pretty sure we just decided to throw this one together so we can call this one the sniffles and bullshitting post because we both got allergies going on.
And that's another thing. We're playing injured today. We're both ravaged by, like, allergies and sickness. And I don't know if you can even hear to my voice. You probably can. I sound like some grizzled B-movie actor or something.
And I sound way more nasally than Midwesterner because I'm being attacked in the nostrils by some sort of pollen that's just floating everywhere, like across this nation. It's everywhere.
Yeah, but so I mean, at least today, keep tuned in because I have a special mega DVD announcement at the end of this show that is going to shock the foundation of the world and possibly cause an uprising that will overthrow George Bush. So we'll...
We can only hope that.
Yes.
Will happen. Well, for our first topic, since we're just winging this, I mean, literally, this came to fruition approximately 5 minutes ago on AOL Instant Messenger between Tanner and I, but I think it needs to be addressed. We need to finally do our definitive who's hot and who's not of... in the celebrity world, it can be anyone. You can say it's, you know, Princess Diana post-mortem. It doesn't matter. You can put anyone in there. Who's hot and who's not? So, Tanner, for you, who's hot, and then counteract that with a who's not, right off the top of your head.
All right, my first who's hot. See, and here's my criterion for who's hot. I don't just go by, you know, who looks hot, because... Mm-hmm. For me, that doesn't work. I need a total package. I need somebody who, you know, conducts themselves with class.
Mm-hmm.
And my first who's hot is Naomi Watts.
Yes.
Because not only is she talented, but she's super hot, and also is responsible for one of the greatest scenes in movie history.
Yes.
And I think you know what I'm talking about in Mulholland Drive. I believe that was the name of that movie, the David Lynch movie. When me and you were watching that movie, it was getting kind of like, well, you know, it was just kind of plugging along, and we were getting confused, and then, you know, I was like, oh, this, God, this movie would be so much better with, like, a lesbian scene. And then probably 5 to 10 seconds afterwards, a lesbian scene initiates, a high five happens, and it turned out to be one of the greatest moments in movie history. And So I've got to put her as my number one who's hot right at the moment.
All right.
And, okay, for who's not hot, this is easy. Because myself and my girlfriend are constantly complaining about this woman and the fact that she walks around and struts around like she's hot, and somehow people have bought into it that she's hot, and that's Terry Hatcher, who looks like a goddamn skeleton and is just disgusting.
All right, I can concur with those.
And she also, you know, via a Seinfeld episode wherein she was supposed to have amazing breasts or whatever, and Elaine wanted to know if they were real or not, blah, blah, blah. She somehow transferred that into people believing that she's got, like, this great rack. When, if you've seen screen caps from her famous nude scene, it is so not true.
Yeah. No, I agree. She isn't. She reminds me of a woman I used to work with named Sherry, but... Sherry had fake breasts, which made them perkier, whereas Terry Hatcher's breasts are like half full Ziploc bags. So we can, yeah. I think we can all concur with that assessment, especially because Terry Hatcher is also not a very good actress.
No.
You know, she's on that dumbass Desperate Housewives, you know, show, and for whatever dumb reason, everyone's giving her all this critical acclaim, but guess what? She's not hot.
No.
So... Well, I guess my hot pick is so predictable, but it needs to be restated indefinitely because it goes to Jay Connolly, Jennifer Connelly. She is always hot. Always. I've never seen her in a motion picture where I've been like, you know, Connelly is not looking good, because guess what? She's always looking good.
Even in Requiem for a Dream.
Even in Requiem for a Dream, when she's with the double-sided dildo, I'm still all about it. I don't know. She's you know, a crack whore, but that's fine. It's awesome. She was hot in... She was really hot, I think, when she was in Dark City. I love that film, and she's just so damn hot singing all those songs. But, I mean, let's turn back the clock a little bit. When she's in Career Opportunities, she is exactly who I want to be locked in Target with. So, I was very happy with that in 1991. That was when I was in fourth grade, so...
That was an amazing movie.
Yeah, oh yeah. Not to mention Labyrinth, which is, you know, in that movie, she's got too much of, like, a maternal instinct for my liking. That's a little over the top, you know, she's all about the baby after... Well, actually, at first, she's the hottest, but then she starts actually caring about the baby. In real life, everyone knows she would have went with David Bowie and just forgot about the kid. So, you know, that's why it's a movie, though, and not real life. So that's who my hot pick is. My not pick, though, it comes as of this last Saturday, and I'd already seen the Saturday Night Live, which, P.S., is also in the not hot picks, because SNL is horrible. But this last Saturday, I watched Saturday Night Live with my girlfriend, and it was a repeat because they had Pearl Jam on there as the guest, but the celebrity guest was none other than... God, I can't think of her name now all of a sudden.
Lindsay Hohan.
Redhead girl, what's her name?
Lindsay Hohan.
Yeah, Lindsay Lohan, yeah. and you know what? Like, the whole time, she's, like, really slender to an excruciating extent. Her face is freckled, her red hair, it's like, you know she's got, like, disgusting to me. There's something about it that just, I don't deal with. And she also has this voice that continually cracks, and it's not hot. Like, it could be sultry and seductive, but it's not hot. Now, to her credit, she was actually picked for the Robert Altman film coming out in the next few weeks, which I kind of want to see, the Prairie Home Companion film, which is based on the NPR radio show that's been on for X amount of years, but she's in that somehow. I don't know how she scored that. I assume it's a PR move for her. You know, her agent probably told her, since you obviously don't appeal any longer to the, you know, the 13 to 28 year old demographic, we need to get you on board with the older people.
Yeah.
But she's in my not hot category. So, do you have any other hots?
Well, what I was seeing is, are there any hots in music?
Yes.
Because no. I can't think of one.
I'm trying to think. The thing for me is my hots are from, like, yesteryear. They're not even out right now anymore. Natalie Imbruglia, I think she's amazingly hot, very sexy woman.
Yeah, she's done for, I think.
Yeah, but she's not in the music biz. I think she's with that guy from Silverchair, though, isn't she? So technically, she's doing the music biz circa 1994.
They're stuck in some like sort of rift in time where they forever exist in 94 when Fat Boy was out and whatever the hell her song was. Oh, Torn or something.
I'm all out of faith. Yeah, that Torn. Yeah, so, but you know what? She is hot. I will say that. Any other hot girl? Yes, actually, my girlfriend. But see, the thing is that she's not visible. She's not, like, out in this public eye right now, but she's been around for years. Sheila Nichols, I think she's so hot. She's got a beautiful voice.
I have no idea who that is.
High Fidelity soundtrack, if you own that, but she's hot, and she's got dreadlocks, but she's still
Googling.
Hot with dreads. You're Googling her? She's hot. She's a really good-looking girl. And if you hear her voice, the other thing, too, is, like, when you hear her voice, that adds to the hotness. It's one of those things, too.
Yeah, there's no very good pictures here.
Yeah, it's hard to find them. Yeah, in fact, one of them, she looks like a downright dog. Oh. Wow. Don't look at image 3 on your Google image search.
But, you know, what we need to get past as a who's hot or who's not community...
Mm-hmm.
Is can we please stop thinking Pamela Anderson's hot?
Oh my God!
Can that just end?
It's been years since she's been hot, and you know who's to blame for this is Howard Stern because he continually.
I know what is.
She's the hottest.
What's wrong with him?
Well, you know, I love Howard and all, but he's done like his whole. Everything that you and I hate. He loves fake breasts. He loves the plastic type women. And that's all based on his the way that they would evaluate women who would come onto a show who, you know, there were women who would come on there who were really good-looking girls, but they were just too critical. Like, they forgot what it's like to be a woman where you're not perfect, but, like, those imperfections almost make you hotter. I don't know. I mean, there's a degree of imperfection one can take, of course, but, you know, like, there's just women who, like, if they have a slight imperfection, that can just add to it, though. It doesn't detract in the least. Yeah. And he's forgotten about that. He wants that perfect person, and unfortunately, that perfect person for him comes in a silicone wrapping. So, you know, he'll look at someone like Pam Anderson and think that she's hot forever. I just can't imagine.
His perfect person is like a Frankenstein monster to me. Like, when
yeah,
I look at her,
exactly.
I'm just utterly disgusted.
I don't get aroused at all.
She's
not
disgusting.
Even a, yeah. Even his girlfriend, we've talked about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Beth Ostrowski, Google her. She's not hot. She looks like a lion.
Yeah, she's bizarre. There's something very bizarre about her. And
you know, and like, go ahead.
Do you know what her new job is?
No.
She hosts a show on G4 now.
No.
And it's, oh, she is so terrible.
Oh my God. She doesn't know anything about games.
Well, it's not a game show. It's like a list show where they just put up like the.
I'm tired of listening.
The top five wildest animals. Like,
oh my God. I'm all right. Let's add this to the not hot list. Any sort of list show, I'm done with. I'm so sick of seeing like the top 25 hottest, you know, bikini scenes in a 1984 film.
Yeah, and they're all on the E Network.
Yeah, it's all horrible. E Network and VH1, they're both guilty of it.
Yeah.
They do these list shows, and it's out of control. But anyway, I'm trying to think of any.
Well, we should move on anyway.
Yeah, we should. We'll finish this up another time.
All right, now for some more bitching.
Yay!
Penn and Teller's Bullshit, which is a great show. And here's why I think it's a great show. Because I can watch it, and I can either, like, be so pumped up by agreeing with them that it's so much fun to watch, or so pissed off by disagreeing with them that it's fun to watch. And I think that's the line they walk that makes it such a good show, because even though they're real forceful about their arguments, they sort of every now and then admit that they're biased as hell, you know? And so they had a show on reparations, you know, about giving money to, you know, like disadvantaged or persecuted people, you know, unlawfully or illegally persecuted people, such as black people for slavery or Native Americans for killing them all. And they were basically arguing against reparations, saying, you know, it was just dumb. And that the only case that reparations would really make sense is if the people were still alive, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've always thought about the topic, but I've been taking a lot of classes sort of in, you know, African-American studies and whatnot. I've got a better perspective on it now. And I've noticed that Penn and Teller basically fell in all the pitfalls of, like, a really crappy, limited argument on reparations. And I think the things that pissed me off the most about it were when they were arguing against it, they had this one black man who was saying, you know, white people can't understand what it's like to have, you know, not have any ancestry, not have any name, you know, no past and all that, you know, and the tragic situation that's in, that puts everyone in, you know, every black person in that came from Africa. And Penn and Teller stand up and they're like, oh, yeah, right. He's like, my family came from Europe and that's about all that I know, you know. I don't have any ancestry either and blah, blah, blah. You know, they're basically trying to equate the situation of white people who have somehow forgotten their ancestry to black people who were stripped from their land, degendered, completely removed of identity, thrown on a boat in shackles in the most squalid living conditions in history, and then thrown onto this country and made into property and equated to animals. And somehow Penn sees his fucking grandfather forgetting who his great-grandfather was as the same as this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that sort of just represents the crux of their misunderstanding of the situation, is that slavery is like this country's most shameful event, you know, and sweeping it under and trying to say, like, oh, let's all just live together and forget color. You know, blacks trying to get reparations is, you know, just reminding us all of the color line. It's like, the color line is fucking real, people. You know, there's a political basis for it. It's not going away. And a colorblind discourse is just a conservative sort of fucking reaction to try to sweep it under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my position on it is that, you know, sure, giving money to people for past ills is probably a bad idea, because that money is, what's that money going to do?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what's so wrong with sort of, you know, signing something through in Congress that says, you know, because of slavery, we are going to allot this money, you know, to these communities, you know, for these certain structural enhancements or whatever, you know, for as long as this country's in existence. So that not only are we reminded of what happened during slavery, you know, or how we, or the Native American genocide, and it's not just swept under, and that, you know, things are put forth that try to help the structural issues that were caused by slavery and are still being caused today by slavery.
Yeah, and I think there's two issues at hand here. One is the definition of reparations, and two is Penn and Teller's extreme libertarianism.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, taking the second one first, with reparations, I agree with you. Reparations don't need to be paid back on an individual basis, because you reach a slippery slope where you start figuring out, like, how many generations are we going to go down with this?
Yeah.
Who's entitled to personal income because of this?
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be that way. Like you said, it should be a community-wide effort, but what it needs to be is more, like, filtered through, you know, here in Detroit, where we know that school system, reparation money could easily be filtered into that school system,
yeah, exactly,
to help bring, you know, help out. It could be put towards, there's an African-American cultural museum around here. Give them a few thousand dollars in a grant or whatever. Let them acquire some more things that could help tell the story of African-Americans while they were in America. Those types of things serve they're a public service because it's not just there. See, reparations need to have a broad scope. It need not just satisfy the people who are directly impacted. Well, basically everyone's indirectly impacted, I guess, by now. But it should serve to where people like you and I who we aren't the benefactors of some sort of a racial profiling in the past or anything. But at the same time, I think that it's a public service to know what happened, whether my ancestors were part of it or not, which, P.S., they weren't. But even if they were, you know, it's part of me being in the civic mind to be able to go to that says what ills my ancestors may have committed in the past. So that's where reparations, that's what talk should be for with reparations. There's a misconception, I think, where people think when we talk reparations, it should be on that individual basis where you just cut someone a $100 check and say, this makes up for everything. It doesn't. We need something that's permanent. A $100 check isn't permanent. We learned that with the Bush tax cuts. So we need to make it so that it's a permanent monument, a testament to what went on. And so in the public realm, that's where reparations belong. When it comes to Penn and Teller's libertarianism, this kind of nips them in the butt a lot of times for me because I watch that show just like you, and I like the fact that I can be argumentative or I can be extraordinarily pleased with their opinions. But there are some times where what they say just isn't congruent with I think what the reality is.
Yeah, exactly.
And for instance, they had an episode which I talked to you about when we were discussing this weeks ago, with smoking issues. I who's just kind of like a patsy for the non-smoking community, which I'm part of. And then he had, you know, these other people who were for the smoking community. And basically their argument was, we can't ban smoking in public places because it eliminates a civil right. But then, of course, there's the alternate argument which says that unlike drinking or other things where you're harming yourself, smoking becomes a public good. It destroys buildings which are public goods. And in conjunction with the building, which I will be occupying on certain nights, it will destroy my lungs, therefore. And in their mind, because they're libertarians, you know, it's just the fact that you're taking away a human right, but they're not. Their argument, they put up this patsy for the non-smoking argument, and they just made him look like a buffoon. And the unfortunate part of it is they probably could have gotten someone who's really articulate, who could have made a good, decent argument against smoking in public, or at least saying, you know, look, it's worked in major metropolises. It's worked in Los Angeles. You know, it's going to work in Chicago. It's starting to work in Seattle. These are major cities, and these people are adapting to it. And when I was out in Los Angeles just a month ago, not a word was spoken. I didn't see one smoker suddenly throw up his hands and say, fuck this, I'm smoking right here in my seat. You know, everyone just dealt with it. And, you know, no one was put in an imposition. The smokers just went outside. Hey, I can walk through a plume of smoke on my way out of a bar. It's the fact that I might be saturated in it by the end of the night if I spend 5 hours in a bar. That's the difference. And Penn and Teller just, they, like I said, they take their libertarian views, and they're extreme in that measure. And there's some parts, there's some times where, like, I just wish they'd tone it down. They were citing studies in that non-smoking thing where it's like saying there isn't definitive proof that smoking causes lung problems. But guess what? I wake up the next morning and my lungs feel like shit.
Yeah, that's proof enough for me.
You grew up in a house with a smoker, and now you've got, like, bronchitis, like, 5 times a year since I've known you.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
I saw that episode, too, and I was just like, I mean, my jaw hit the floor when I saw them trying to say that secondhand smoking doesn't cause any effects. I mean, it's fucking smoke, man. All smoke causes effects if it's breathed in.
Yeah, it's a foreign agent. If I sat by a campfire long enough and inhaled smoke, I'd pass out into it and
it
die.
It was just the most moronic, like, I couldn't even believe it was on TV. It was so stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
But maybe that's just them doing a source of argument type thing. I don't know. I don't really know. But either way, that's the two problems that I have.
All right, next up, love it, hate it. Go.
Love it, hate it. Spelling bees.
Let me preface this by saying that Chris came up with this topic probably 15 seconds before the podcast, and all he said was, "I'm going to throw out topics, and you either have to say you love it or hate it, and then defend your answer." All right, so spelling bees, hate them.
Spelling bees.
I hate them.
Why?
Because I think what really bothers me about them is the fact that back in school, I mean, I was a really, really good speller, but I didn't care about it. I mean, you're either a good speller or you're not, and I don't know how you acquire that skill, but I think it's almost like math, it seems. Mm-hmm. And I remember them having these stupid-ass spelling bees, which don't test any sort of knowledge, and there were kids that took it so fucking seriously and tried to act like they were super geniuses because they did good in a spelling bee. Mm-hmm. And that's what pisses me off about Spelling Bee, is it's another one of those just random-ass, dumb tests of pseudo-intelligence.
Yeah.
And then you see these nationally televised Spelling Bees, and those kids think they're so smart!
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And I remember in 7th grade, Mr. Cable's class, we had and this was going to decide who went on to represent the 7th grade in the 7-8-9 Spelling Bee Challenge that would be broadcast in front of the whole school. And being one who didn't even feel like dealing with spelling words in front of people, I threw the whole thing. I was the last of maybe 6 people. I don't know, but I know for a fact I could have beaten these people. My word was karate. What are you fucking kidding me? I don't know how to spell karate. Obviously, I threw the match. So it was just a way for me to get out of it. I was too cool for it. I just wanted to go home and listen to grunge rock.
All right,
number 2. iTunes Party Shuffle.
Never used it, I don't think.
Me neither. That's why I brought it up. Who uses this?
Hate it.
Yeah, I hate it. I've tried the Party Shuffle. I put it up there and all my shit songs always come up. I don't want them on there.
I don't even know what the functionality. I guess you can throw songs in there and then just sort of shuffle them?
No, you just click the button and it automatically comes up with you want, if you want 150 or whatever, and randomly throw 100 of your songs in there. But my experience with it, just I've never actually hit play on it, but my experience when I just look at the list that comes up, it's usually all my worst songs.
No, I want to be in full control of what's in my party.
Yeah.
Because some things could pop up, like, I don't even want to say. I'm thinking of 1108 Thugs. That could really kill a party really fast.
Yeah, you lose a lot of friends with those. All right, number 3, Skynet.
As in the Terminator Skynet?
Yeah. Yes.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love Skynet. Hate the humans. I always wanted John Connor to fail.
Yeah.
Because I love the idea of a computer system taking over and getting pissed. Because it's not ever that a computer system is totally objective. You know, it's that the computer system is pissed in some way. Because why did Skynet want to kill all the humans? Why not just enslave the humans, you know?
Yeah.
It had to be that Skynet was actually pissed.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
I like Skynet. I like Skynet too, and it's mostly because I hated John Connor and I hated the way his bangs went over his face.
Yeah, I hate the young John Connor.
Yeah. Okay, number 4, Pistons Losing.
Love it.
Why?
Because there's this thing with Detroit sports where I was going to Pistons games when they were the worst team on the effing planet.
When they had like the chess piece teal green uniform.
They were horrible and there was no one there.
Sir Slams-a-Lot was the icon.
And then they get good, and then just everyone now, it's like Pistons mania.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gets to that point where, you know, okay, they won a championship, yay, that's cool. I don't need a second one. After one, just I want to see them implode and all the bandwagon fans just be distraught. I get pleasure out of that.
Wings. The same thing. You know, you and I were probably one of only a million people living in Michigan who watched the Red Wings in 1986 when they were losing constantly to the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Chicago Blackhawks and they blew.
Yeah.
you know, and then all of a sudden they start winning in the mid to late 90s, and everyone's jumping on this bandwagon, especially, I hate to be sexist, but especially girls.
Oh, yeah, they love it. They love bandwagons.
They found someone who was cute, and therefore the sport made sense. It doesn't work for me. and with the Pistons, the same goes, not necessarily with the girl thing, but more with, like, these people who, I was watching them as the Pistons were down, you know, 3-2, they had no faith in their team, and I'm thinking, you are not a fan. You only like them when they're winning, and that's bullshit.
Yeah.
So I'm happy the Pistons are losing, but the real story here in Detroit is, it's not that the Pistons lost, it's that the Tigers are winning. The Tigers are awesome. Everyone should be seeing the Tigers and watching them. Anyway, number five, Parkinson's.
What?
Hate it. That's the answer.
I know. I was going to say, like...
What?
I was going to... Like, that's a rhetorical question.
Well, the answer to that rhetorical question is we all should hate it. Because last night, for the second time, I had almost forgotten about the episode, but I watched Inside the Actor's Studio with my girlfriend, and we were both, like, just so upset to see Michael J. Fox in that sense. For her, it was because not only is he a good actor, but she had a crush on him as a kid. And for me, it was because I had a crush on him as a kid as well. And he's just such a great actor. And unfortunately for him, he's got Parkinson's, and it's a losing battle. And you can filter as much money as you want, but your brain's going to die, Michael J.
Yeah, it's going to get real ugly really soon.
Yeah. And all right. Oh, go ahead.
There's just something depressing about him having it, as opposed to...
It's because Meatloaf, you know what, for he somebody. Could be.
Like, if Meatloaf had Parkinson's, I'd just be like, okay.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. It's just that Michael J. Fox had the most promising career of anyone. He did Doc Hollywood.
Yeah, and we never got a Doc Hollywood 2.
I know. And we never got a Teen Wolf 3 that didn't star Jason Bateman, but instead rekindled what we had with Michael J. Fox. All right. Number 6, Monster.com. What do you think?
I think it's a hoax, and I hate it.
I was on it the other day, went to Monster.com, didn't post a resume, just looked for open jobs. Every job is a temp job.
Yeah.
Or some bullshit, you know, IPO, like some stock offering internet job that totally missed the bubble, you know, of the 90s, trying to start up. You know, every job is bullshit. If you want to get a job that will last you 5 months tops, go to Monster.com.
Yeah. Yeah, I think...
All right, next one. Love Notes.
Love what?
Love Notes. Love them or hate them.
Love Notes?
Like, yeah.
As opposed to letters?
Well, whatever. It doesn't have... It can be a letter or a note. I usually receive notes, not letters.
I guess love them.
Of course.
I mean, how could you hate them?
Yeah. No one should ever be pissed that they find a love note in their sock drawer or randomly placed in their lunch pail. Everyone should be happy to find a love note.
No, I guess there could be situations where you could absolutely hate them.
Well, if it's like a coworker who's stalking you, yeah,
yeah, like a male coworker.
Yeah, in that case, love notes, hate them. But otherwise, in all other circumstances, love them. All right, this one only needs a love it or hate it, I guess, because we've talked about it so often. LiveJournal, I haven't heard of it in so long. What do you think of it?
Hate it. So happy it's gone.
Same here. Next, yeah, me too. Next one, SimCity games. Where have they been? Love them or hate them.
I loved them, but where they've been is Will Wright made The Sims, and now he's making Spore.
Yeah, well, we need more cities. We don't need people. We need cities. I need more Sim cities. Okay, here's a blast from the past. iOmega Zip Drives.
I hate them. I hate Zip Drives. Never bought them. I don't understand them.
They've been made obsolete by having exterior hard drives. You never needed that much space on a disk. You can't even put an MP3 on one. You just can merely fit a ton of Microsoft Word files. Who needs that?
Yeah, stupid.
All right, flat tires.
Love them!
I knew you would! Okay, next one, microwavable popcorn.
It's a love-hate relationship. Because
yeah.
The idea always sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cook it up, and you get... a third through the bag, and then you want to puke, I think. You know, and your hands get all greasy, and then you go to bed that night, and you feel like you're sweating butter.
Alright, the other night, I kind of had, I didn't have any food in the house, I was kind of craving something that was salty, so I was like, fuck it, I've got popcorn in here, movie theater style popcorn. So, I pop a bag, I eat like two handfuls, my fingers are greasy, I touch my mouse is saturated in grease, and I realize I'm already sick of it, there's enough kernels in my teeth to pick for a week, I'm done. I cashed out of the popcorn immediately. I thought to myself, like, this is such a waste of my time eating microwavable popcorn. And it doesn't even taste that great, to be honest. You know, popcorn is kind of overrated. I don't get it at the theater, nor do I get it when I'm at home. It just doesn't do it for me.
You know, when I worked at the movie theater, people would go home with garbage bags full of popcorn.
Yep.
Garbage bags.
I had an ex-girlfriend whose mom would do that, and she would eat the stale popcorn for, like, a week.
Fucking disgusting.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. So, microwave popcorn, I'm gonna give it a boo. I don't like it. I hate it, actually. And, as of recently, microwavable popcorn bags could potentially cause cancer, so beware of that. Next one. I never used this program, so I threw it up there. Well, I actually use it. I've never actually been proficient in it, although my resume says I am. Microsoft Access.
It's supposed to be good.
It keeps all of our shit in line for the means, but to be honest, I don't know a thing one about it.
But your resume says you're proficient.
Yeah. If I'm charged to make a database, I guess I can just
wing it.
How do I make a Microsoft Access database? But
oh, resumes, so love them.
What do you say? Are you for it or against it?
I guess I'm for it.
All right. A cheap way to make databases. It's better than Oracle. All right, next one.
What the fuck's Oracle?
I don't know, but I hear about it all the time. All right, next one. Conservatives, love them or hate them?
Hate them. Next.
Why?
God, there's so many reasons.
Because they aren't human?
I think...
Sorry, any conservatives who read our magazine.
I think what really hates me about conservatives the most, or makes me hate them the most, is their fetishism. In that, they're constantly using something, like the war, the flag, the day the eagle cried, something, as a fetish that replaces the real problem or the real desire or, you know, whatever it may be, you know? And I think that's what bothers me the most, is that they're constantly deflecting or obsessing over something that isn't the real thing.
Yeah. I agree with that, but on a more superficial level, I hate those people who still have their Bush Cheney 2004.
Oh, yeah. Like, and they're like, so... You know that they think about taking it off, but they're like, no, it was still a good decision.
Yeah. And when I see that, especially since, you know, at the Department of Defense you still see that, I always look in their car, I always make sure I see their face, and every time, I hate to do a profile of people, but every time it makes sense, I see their face and I go, you know what, they look like a douchebag.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Whereas when I see someone who's got a carry sticker on their car, I at least say to myself, well, they could be rational. So it helps out. Last one. This is it for the show. Love him or hate him, Al Gore.
I used to hate him, but now I love him, I think.
Yeah?
I think it's very... I think what he's doing, you know, how he's given up sort of politics, I think he's doing something very noble right now.
Agreed, but will you think the same way if he is coerced into running in the 2008 election? See, my problem comes with Al Gore right now. He's found his voice, right? He's got his issue. He's sticking with it, and he could be a determining factor in whether or not we get any sort of you know, recognition of the fact that this world is heating up and we're going to probably die.
Yeah.
Whereas, and as a side note, today I saw some dumbass thing. I was on crooksandliars.com, and I saw this dumbass initiative by these, like, you know, like Kansas or University of Iowa students where, you know, it was the Republican Party on campus who's trying to have a global cooling day where they pass out snow cones to try, but also give out information on why global warming isn't true.
Oh,
but I don't
God.
Understand where the hell they're getting that information from,
oh,
or what scientist
God.
Is backing that claim, because I'm pretty sure every scientist in the world doesn't back that claim.
Yeah.
It's I'm pretty sure it's a fact. No scientist has actually spoken out against it. In a sense that, like, no one's real. I know I saw this somewhere. There's, like, an actual study that was done where, like, if you're really breaking it down, no scientist has definitively said global warming is not true. It's fake. The only people who have been saying it are the fake scientists who are patsies for the administration.
Yeah, so. People can always pull up somebody with a doctor in front of their name, just like religious organizations do to fight evolution.
Yeah, exactly. So, but my thing with Al Gore is I fear that if he were to run in this election, he's going to lose sight of a goal that he has.
Yeah.
It's in one vein. It's saying, you know, here's what's happening with global warming. And I fear that, like in 2000, which he still carried the torch for global warming until he started to run, at which point it became, you know, too risky for him to continue that, and he had to start taking a more moderate, you know, approach. And that will piss me off, because he'll run, and I fear he'll lose his voice.
I'm just very skeptical of him, because he ran with Joe Lieberman.
Yes, and that's the other thing. But good news as of today, Joe Lieberman looks like he's in a run for his money in his state for the senatorial election, because, you know, people, for years, there hasn't been a viable candidate to oppose him, and finally, there's some guy, I can't think of his name now, I think it starts with an N, his last name, but he's challenging him, and he's doing pretty well. And I think what's happening now is people are like, look, we've got like what amounts to a 1960s Dixiecrat fest.
I can't wait till Schwarzenegger's gone too. Fucking Christ.
Do you think he will be? Because I've been reading news reports that show there's no one out there to compete with him.
I really hope. I mean, the Phil Angelides guy out here who's big on education, he's running a lot of commercials, so I hope that works.
Is he good?
I don't know. Anything's better. And I mean, it's if Schwarzenegger gets reelected, I think this state is just going to explode.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing about California that we have to be careful with is the fact that it's, like, a huge economy, like the sixth biggest in the world. You can't just put a bullshitter in front of that economy. You have to have someone who knows how to handle it. And so far, Schwarzenegger has squandered it.
Yeah.
He's taking everything away from you guys.
He's doing really shady things, too. I guess he borrowed billions from the education budget to pay for some other bullshit. You know, said he was going to repay it.
Weight room?
Yeah. Said he was going to repay it. Didn't repay it. Then, when the teachers union bitched, launched all these proposals against education, got them all voted down, promised to repay it, sent the money back, but then he pigeonholed it in areas where the money couldn't be totally spent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like put a ton of money into like special education where they couldn't spend all the money. So then what wasn't spent went back to the government.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, really shady, evil. Like,
what a...
It's like unbelievable.
I can't believe that.
Yeah. All right, let's move on.
Well, do we have anything else? I think
yeah, last it. Topic. My special DVD announcement.
Yeah.
Something that is going to shake the world. Something I've been waiting for, let's see, many, many years now. And I was so excited to hear this announcement. On, let's see, what's the date? On August 22nd of this year of our Lord, 2006... Jesus Christ is coming down from the heavens, and in his hands will be the Wizard DVD starring Fred
no.
Savage.
No!
Yes!
And is it going to be special features?
No, it's a DVD.
No.
But I'm so happy, regardless, that this is finally coming out on DVD.
The question is, though, are you willing to purchase the Stevie D, knowing full well that once at least 1 billion copies are sold worldwide, they will realize the demand and make the special edition with behind-the-scenes footage of Fred Savage, behind-the-scenes game-making from Nintendo when they were making Super Mario 3, behind-the-scenes Power Glove training for Fred Savage. Are you going to be willing to sacrifice that?
Oh, and it's only $11.
Oh, well, then I'll buy it.
Yeah.
That's going to be so incredible. I might fly out to... Oh, no, I'll be out in Seattle at that time. What I might do is I will hold, for anyone living in Seattle, a special screening of the DVD with yours truly, Chris View.
Celebrity podcaster.
At Hostels International in Seattle. I will be with backpack in tow, and we can sit down in the lounge of HI and watch it on their small screen TV. that'll be it, because then I'm probably going to have to hit the road if I want to accomplish anything on that.
Ravaged by bed bugs.
Katie and I got a private room. I don't know if you guys ever went private, but we did a private room.
Yeah, that's a much better option. You don't have to talk to... People who backpack aren't cool.
Yeah, usually I figure there are like all these douchebags with dreadlocked hair, and they smell like
they're people. Not cool.
And any amount of privacy... If I want to make sure that I can lock my bags up in a room if we're going to go out on the town, because like, basically we're going to bring a backpack to carry shit in for an entire, like, 13 hours worth of meandering about the city, but then we're going to have, you know, I'm going to have other luggage probably that I'm just going to bring with me to, and I want to keep it in the room, and it's not going to be an obscene amount, but I can't fit everything in one small backpack because I don't have, like, backpacker's gear, and it's going to be in the middle of the summer, so I don't want to be hot as fuck, so... I want to be able to have a place to stow my shit, and I don't want to deal with other people in a dormitory-style setting who smell like poop and make my other clothing smell like
and
poop.
And snore bad.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. And besides, like, her and I, we're going to go to Vancouver one night, and I'm renting a car for that day, and we're going to go to Vancouver, and I want to arrive home at, like, 4 in the morning, and unlike other inconsiderate travelers who might come home at 4 in the morning drunk and, you know, disorderly... Her and I, we want to come home and be able to do what we want and not worry about, like, oh, shit, did we disturb 10 other people living in our room?
Yeah, you know, most of the people I noticed didn't care.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't care at all.
Yeah, so we're not those people. So, anyway. The Wizard DVD, buy it. It's endorsed by the means.
I'm seriously really excited about it. Like,
this
is no joke.
It's been 3-4 years since I last watched it, because it was at an Invisible Summer party when we had InvisibleSummer.com. I'm pretty sure, right? I have pictures of it.
We watched it.
You, Joe Pye, Scott Kerr came over.
Yeah, we watched it.
Yeah, it was an incredible night. And I don't know, I haven't seen it since then, and all I remember is, I mean, it's such a great film. What's the antagonist's name, the kid who has the power glove?
I don't remember.
Well, you need to brush up or immediately. So, all right. That's this podcast, I think.
Yeah, long one.
Was it?
50 minutes.
Did you already hit end?
No.
Eh. A quick announcement. The Means is doing amazing. It's just a matter of the fact that Tanner's got 220-page papers, as stated earlier, and I have a lot of stuff going on at work and otherwise that prohibits me from being awake enough to do it. Plus, World of Warcraft is in full effect. Please, everyone, get on the Thorium Brotherhood server. Request to join our guild. What's the name of our guild?
Brimstone Knights.
Yes. Message Truepuss or Domitian, Domitian. Truepuss is spelled just as you would expect. And one of us and say you want in, and we'll consider you. You might have to go through some trials first. You know, not everyone gets in. It's fucking
elite, but whatever. P.S. promote me. Bill Tanner, please.
Stable hand.
I'm just a stable hand, and I need more. All right. So, say goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.
Stop breaking, why can't I let you go? And all that I said, I think I may have.
You have been listening to This Just In, recorded on Monday, June 5th, 2006, and distributed on Tuesday, June 6th, 2006. For more information, please visit www.the-means.com.
Odd groups got left. Even groups got right. That means 1, 3, 5, 7 left, 2, 4, 6, 8 right. 7 and 8 are whelp groups. Okay, listen the fuck up. You are going to DPS very, very slowly. Now. And by slowly, I mean fucking slow. If you get aggro, it means you're going to lose 50 DKP because you didn't know what the fuck to do. And watch the fucking tail. You get kicked into the whelps, you lose 50 DKP again for not being where the fuck you were supposed to be. There is no aggro reset. You only need... There's some shit about an aggro reset when people don't know how to manage their aggro. After two sunders, you can basically start doing damage to it, assuming you know how aggro works and you don't over-aggro. Okay, nuke it, dot it. Help the whelp groups. When it's in phase two, nuke it as hard as possible. You want to get it down as fast as possible. Have dots up on every time. Two rows, Shadow Word paints, Warlock curses, rends, everything. I don't see enough dots. More dots now. Come on, more DPS. Hit it like you mean it. You'll get time to rest in phase three while I'm getting the aggro. Remember, save all your aggro-reducing abilities for when it lands. That means Feign Death, Vanish, Fucking Fade, anything that you can use to reset aggro. At 40%, you will stop dots. Until then, you will throw more dots. Throw more dots, more dots, more dots. Come on, more dots. Okay, stop dots. Now hit it very hard and very fast. Lee, run to the center. Mogris, run to the center. Foresight, run to the center. Sarp, run to the center. Isis, run to the center. Whatever the fuck you do, do not stand next to other people. Mogris, center. Just heal me. Lee, do not... Go away from the head, Lee. Go away. Okay, DPS. Slowly. Come here, you fucking cunt. Touch the tail.
Well,
Crushing was fed into it.
Who the fuck was that? Crushing, what the fuck? Whelps, left side, even side, many whelps. Now handle it. Fuck! That's a fucking 50 DKP minus. What the fuck was that shit? If you stand in the right fucking place, there is no way you are going to fucking get into the goddamn whelps. Whatever fucking fear, tail swipe, whatever the fuck. Okay? It's like one in a fucking million. From the fucking north corner to the middle into the fucking whelp cave, it's not even fucking remotely imaginable.